Welcome to Pleb Chain Radio, a live show brought to you by Plebs for Plebs, which focuses on the intersection of Nostr and Bitcoin protocols. Join QW and Avi as they run down the weekly news and developments, breaking down the current thing and the future frontier with the foundation of decentralization, the builders, thinkers, doers, and plebs. All right, we are live.
Welcome, gentle plebs, to episode number 83 of Pleb Chain Radio. Today is Friday, the 18th of October, and it is 1:02 p.m. on the east coast of the United States. At the time of recording, we have a fun show ahead of you today. Our guest is Vitor Pamplona, creator of Amethyst, and a man, apparently, who doesn't get much sleep at night because he is pushing features and apps out nonstop. Just a reminder, if you are listening to the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, first of all, thank you for listening. But I would urge you to hit pause and switch over to the Fountain Podcasting app, where you can earn some sats as you listen and support the value for value revolution. The show is, of course, recorded live on NostrNess and broadcast on Zap.stream. And on NostrNess, the live chat can get pretty lively. And for our meme readout today, QW, it's a one-frame meme that has two Chads looking at each other. The first Chad is you. Well, not you specifically, QW, but it's you, the listener, you, the Nostrich.
Ah, I thought you meant me, Avi. It could be me too, right?
Could be. And so the first Chad, who is you, says, "You were supposed to be the definitive truth." He says that as he's looking at the second Chad. And the second Chad is the Nostr protocol. And he replies, "Sir, I'm just a protocol for relaying signed events." And the point here being, QW, people put a lot of weight and a lot of meaning, a little too much, in my opinion, on what Nostr is meant or not meant to be. And sometimes it's good for that sanity check that says, this is just a protocol for relaying signed events. It can do what you make it.
You just made me think of, you know, when you send an email, like the term, I'm going to send you an email.
That's right.
Can we just say, I'm going to send you a Nostr? I mean, isn't email just a protocol?
Well, email is a far more specific protocol.
Right, right.
Than Nostr. I mean, Nostr, because it is as generic as something used for relaying signed events, it could be anything. It just so happens that the lowest hanging fruit, the easiest to conceptualize, has been the social media use case. But right. As we will get into it with Vitor a little later in our conversation with him, there's more stuff you can do with it.
So email protocol is more of like a micro protocol, and Nostr is more of a macro protocol.
Maybe.
Protocol.
Super protocol. Could be. But QW, you've been watching Nostr culture as you always do. What do you have for our culture corner?
It's been a slow week. You know what, Avi? I think it's always the same. When we have big conferences or Nostr events, it seems like the Nostr culture kind of takes a little bit of a delay to it post events. So obviously you went to Nostr Valley. That is on Zap.stream. Anybody missed it? There's about 90 minutes on Zap.stream. I just checked it out, but I was watching it live, and I did watch yours. So amazing job. Clearly it was a grassroots video, but it was effective. It did drive the point, and I was able to receive what you were throwing down there.
Well, good.
Other than that, I would say Halloween is one of those things that's an annual event that's coming up late this month. I think it's in Atlanta, so I think it's going to be attached to the TabConf. But that's something, if anybody's in the Atlanta area and wants to shake it up with some plebs, put a costume on, you know, put your Craig Wright Satoshi costume on. Absolutely. That's something to look forward to this month.
Love it. I wish I could be there, KW, but other stuff is happening. No pun intended. For our sermon today, it's micro apps versus super apps. And KW, I'm sure you've seen some discussion on Nostra in the last week or two about micro apps and super apps. Have you?
Yeah, yeah. Everything from our Lord and Savior Fiat Joff mentioning that micro apps. But you know, we've always talked about the other stuff is going to be the big deal. But then I've seen Vitor, our guest, talk about micro apps versus super apps. So it's something that's definitely in the mix, and we've reached that juncture where we're kind of just trying to adopt where we can. But yeah, I have. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I mean, look, and you hear this from developers all the time, Nostra developers, right? It's a really simple protocol to develop on. You can spin up a simple client in less than a day of dev work, right? So it's that simplicity that allows for clients to be built for very niche-specific use cases, right? So a really good example of this is ZapLife.lol. May its soul rest in peace. But if any Nostriches listening would remember maybe a year and a half ago, I believe it is Pablo who built this, and it was just a screen that live updated zaps between people, right? It showed how much people were zapping and would keep, and there was a little bit of aggregation. You could look at the number of zaps in an hour and so on, some filtering you could do. But it was very, very niche use case, right? Show the zaps. That's it.
Wow, the niche. But it was amazing because when we did the Zapathons, you can start gamifying. And then if you remember the first time Nostr touched Bitcoin conference, that big leaderboard screen or the screen in the back Jumbotron deal was everybody's comments was zaps. That was fun. But those little things like that, man, it's that salt bay, a little bit of a salt on the steak, right?
With the flourish. Yeah, for sure. So that was ZapLife.lol was an example of a micro app. There's another one called Memester, KW, which is, I think it looks at, it's a client that only displays events or kind one notes that have the hashtag meme on them, and maybe there are a couple of other hashtags, but that's all it does. And typically if there is a hashtag meme, then there is some kind of image pointer or pointer to an image in there, right, with a meme in it. So that's another simple example of a micro, but there's several others, right? And we can get into this with Vitor later in the show. So those are micro apps. But then Nostra, not only is Nostra an easy protocol to build these simple clients on, it's also incredibly composable, right? Because of that interoperability and those even and easy data standards, you can mix and match and make much bigger apps from these small, by mixing up some of these small use cases, right? So I'll give another example here is Nostr, the iOS client built by Fabian, has integrated two other Nostr clients, Nostr Ness and Zap.stream. And I believe, and we can ask Vitor this, I see this as an ignorant iPhone user, iOS user, but presumably Amethyst has that type of integration in it as well. So the question is, now we've talked about micro apps, we've talked about the big super apps that are composed potentially of many micro apps, if not of many use cases, right, into one singular client. Do you think there's a sweet spot, KW, for the size of an app on the micro to super spectrum?
I don't know if there's a sweet spot, but I do think it needs to, the interoperability needs to be there. So if a super app wants to add a micro app, you know, kind of like a 10 commandments of NIPS or something, or the, you know, something where there's cohesion regardless. So it's an option. If it's a tapas plate, you know, humans love, choice. So if I'm looking at a plate of food, it's just a bunch of micro apps. I can put those together into, let's say, a super app. That would be something I would love as a consumer. Human nature, we like choice. So if there's a way to make those nips cohesive to where there's not going to be a grind between them, I think that's a huge opportunity.
Right, because there is a case to be made potentially, right? Or certainly a question to be asked, which is, does having too many micro apps, I should say, for a new user coming in, does that create a fragmented experience? And then conversely, if you have one giant super app that has every single feature you can dream of, does that become a confusing user experience for someone trying to use it, right? And I think we had this conversation.
The big question is, when you say sweet spot, is a super app for everyone? Is there an intro app that you kind of level up to super app?
Yeah, exactly. And we were talking to Oscar Merry on our show from Fountain. And I think one of the questions to him was, why don't you include creating new kind one notes from Fountain? Because right now the only notes you can create on Fountain are replies to podcasts, right? Or Zap events, or Fountain's version of Zap events. Because if for example, right, a case can be made if Oscar introduced creating kind one notes, fresh kind one, that had nothing to do with podcasts necessarily, it could make Fountain a stickier experience, right? A user doesn't have to leave Fountain. They're listening to their podcast, they're creating their notes, they're posting their memes.
I like you use the word sticky too. I think that making our culture sticky is a big, I like that.
Yeah. Well, but Oscar's retort or response to that was, well, that's not the point of Fountain. Right, he wants it to be a podcasting app, and not add other confusing things. So there's the whole counterpoint to all of this, which is you could say a web browser is a super app, right? Because you can browse multiple internet applications within the same window of the web browser, right, on different tabs, and that doesn't feel like a fragmented user experience. So I guess,
right. Do well, we because view the tabs on the top, you choose your experience, right? Just like you would choose your micro app.
Right. And it could be a completely different experience, right? You could have your banking information on one tab. You could have, some music or YouTube video playing on another tab, right? There doesn't have to be any kind of cohesion to your browser experience. So that is the case. To me, for a super app, you can think of it as a web browser the web browser is to the internet, a super app is to Nostr. Well, all of that said, KW, the good news is we are so early, right? And all of us here are early adopters, and we welcome all the experimentation we're seeing, and we'll see which winning model, super app, micro app, something in between, emerges the strongest.
Yeah, and all these micro apps, and I mean, they're ingredients in a larger recipe as we move forward, right?
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it.
Yeah, just find that cohesion. make sure you're building for interoperability within the app ecosystem too, if I had to say one thing.
Yeah, indeed. With that said, KW, I think it's time to bring on our guest, Vitor.
Welcome, the chef that can manage all these ingredients.
Hello, everybody.
Master chef. That's right.
maybe you'll be a sous chef one day, Avi. I'll wash the plates.
So, Vitor, we got to start with a burning question. When you're done with Amethyst, eventually, will it do everything humanly possible on Nostr?
Yeah, so that was our goal. That was what we set up Amethyst for. When we came in, early or late 2022 or so, The goal was to make one single application that included every single Nostr feature you could possibly imagine. And the point of the app, you mentioned before, right? That's not the point for Fountain. Like I said, the point for Amethyst is to test this integration between multiple NIPs, the proposals for Nostr, into just one client, how to merge it all and how to merge and how to test that from an engineering perspective, those connections between multiple NIPs so that we can reuse, you know, and compose things to one on top of another to make a better experience.
So is the web browser analogy a suitable one in Amethyst case?
No, so the browser analogy works better for other types of Nostr apps. Like there is one called Spring that essentially loads all the web apps as one browser would. So you just select which app you want to play at any given time, and it loads that application. So you might like Coracle and Snort, and you can have the two apps. And this Spring app will just be one app in the phone that once you open, you can click and open Coracle, click and open Snort and or ZapLife.law, for instance. But it's the other app is literally inside the Spring app. So it becomes more like a browser that it just loads somebody else's code and it runs as if it was just one app. For Amethyst, we have to recode everything to make sure, you know, it integrates well with the system we have. And it's all native, so we don't really allow any HTML or JavaScript code, which most of these clients are, into Amethyst. So it's a little bit different. I think from a user's perspective, it's also different that you know you are in a separate client when you're navigating on Spring. You're not really reusing the same app kind of everywhere. With Amethyst, it's really just one app. We don't open someone else's code. You don't see different interfaces or different things that are happening based on, say, the page that you are looking at.
Got it. It's a tighter integration, right?
Yeah, but that's to your point earlier. It is, I think, yet another model that we are testing on Nostr, because that might be very well where we go. If we decide that, you know, micro apps are the future, we will have to have some form of app managing app that can just install all of the apps that I need. Imagine picturing, like, you know, using so many micro apps that you have to download 100 or 200 apps every time you buy a new phone, right? So installing them one by one will be really annoying for everybody. So you want to make sure you have an app that does that work for you. That just install everything you want and keep everything up to date. Maybe there is a service behind that app that tests the integration between them and make sure they work together with one another. But essentially helps you manage all those micro apps from a single user standpoint. So this is not going to be for everybody, right? Like this might be for pro users that need that amount of apps that just are on everything and everywhere, and they just need to, you know, make sure everything they use in Nostr is just synchronized. Meaning, you know, if app A follows a given version of a NIP, app B should also follow that version. And the app manager will kind of move the two apps together when both of them start implementing a new version of the same NIP.
So let me ask you this. Do you, on Amethyst, again, I ask this as an iPhone user who doesn't have an Android and hasn't used one, actually. Do you have Nostr Nest and Zap.stream integrated?
So Zap.stream, yes. And Nostr Nest is kind of faulty right now because we don't allow users to see just audio yet. So the audio integration, audio playback in general on Amethyst is really bad. We just don't have a good player for that. And because of that, Nest Surfer and some of the Fountain stuff also suffers. it's just not great, a great user experience right now. But because both NAS and Zap.stream, they kind of share the same NIP, and we do implement that NIP as well, you can see, for instance, the live chat for this room on Amethyst the same way you do on NAS and Zap.stream. So you can have some, but it's, I would say it's a partial integration right now, but the goal for Amethyst is just to have everything into it, including Noster.NAS.
And that's because when we set up our room and I click that box, stream to Zap.stream, it is actually streaming to Amethyst as well, correct?
Correct. We just don't have a great player right now, so sometimes it doesn't even play the audio. But I know we're gonna get there.
Would that be an example of the integration you talked about? So not NAS, but you say you do Zap.stream, right?
Correct.
So it's not like you've just lifted and shifted the code base within, copy-pasted the Zap.stream code base into the Amethyst code base. You actually had to tweak some things to make it a tighter integration. Is that right?
Yeah, in that particular case, we had to recode everything from scratch. So it's not really reusing any of the code that was out there, mostly because the language we use, Kotlin, is just a different language than what Zap.stream was made of.
So just thinking ahead then, Vitor, right, in for the super app play, whether it's for Amethyst or for other apps, right, that are looking to integrate multiple use cases and experiences under one roof, it doesn't sound very scalable to me. And you could tell me if I'm wrong, because you obviously have, you know, some developers prefer TypeScript, some might write it in Haskell. Your code base is in Kotlin. If you have to refactor everything from scratch, every micro app from scratch to include it in the super app, how scalable do you think that is?
I actually think it's more scalable than making a super app itself. Like, scaling micro apps is actually very easy. The issue with any super app, and that's why, you know, we are a super app and, you know, we're going to be a super app for a very long time. And to your point before, the only way we stop this train is when Amethyst ceases to be an important player in the game, because every micro app became a better version of the feature that Amethyst had, right? So, and because for us, that's the difficult part, is how do you make sure your UIs, your user experience, your backend systems, they are as good as any of these micro apps. Because now, as a super app, you are not really, you don't have the focus power that any micro app would have, right? In a micro app, you just care about that specific feature you are looking at, and you can just make that thing as good as you want in a full-time, you know, job for yourself. With me and Amethyst, for instance, I have to split my time in all of the NIPs and try to get them into a level that is minimally acceptable by the user. So Amethyst will be there for as long as the other micro apps allows us to, which is also funny, because I think if we end up getting to a future where Amethyst doesn't exist anymore and we all have micro apps everywhere, it is going to be a better future, and I will be happy on sunsetting the entire project, because there are so many micro apps out there. The decentralization factors is just way better. And because they can do their job much better than Amethyst could, or at least if you take a long enough approach, they should be able to, then it's going to be a better design experience for everybody. The trick that you were mentioning before is, how do you get all of these micro apps in a way back to the phone, back to the desktops that people are using, and how do you help them manage all these applications? Because it's going to be, you know, you have to have a signer somewhere, you're going to have a relay, a local relay somewhere, because duplicating databases, one for each of these micro apps, is not going to be a good thing. So you're going to have to really split what each one of these apps are doing to really get to the point that, you know, it can be an interesting and successful environment to just be in from a user standpoint. We have some of that on Android right now with the Amber as a signer for every other app, all local. and then Citrine, which is the relay that we also run the phone, together with, say, something like ZapStar that allows you to figure out what to install from the Nostr ecosystem into the phone. So the three apps are already kind of setting us up to that future where we might as well just have micro apps everywhere.
This is going to be obvious. I'm just trying to think of how to purple pill someone with micro apps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And frankly, that is the issue we have had for quite some time. And I think that is the reason why something like Amethyst and the other apps are so good or were so good in the past. It's just like, it's just one thing to tell your friend to download, install, and create right. a user.
They need the familiarity.
As opposed to having to install, like, you know, let's install a signing app. Let's install a relay app. Let's install Tor, like we had for Amethyst since, you know, for a few months now. Yeah. It's just all complicated for new users.
Yeah.
But
yeah, the learning curve is going to be steep, but rewarding.
Right. But like, as we evolve in Nostr and the amount of apps become, I would say, normalized. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you get a phone and you already have a Nostr set up from the manufacturer, right? So you just you get a new phone on the mail and you just type your NSEC and your NSEC loads everything up for you. All the apps you use, and like, the phone does not work without an NSEC.
Mm-hmm.
And from that standpoint, then, you know, the relay is already there. The signer is already there. All these other apps are already there. All you need to do is to figure out, you know, are you going to be using Demus or Amethyst or Primal, or, you know, what's your kind one
or NAS client Fabrica
that you're going to use? Yeah. Or what's your healthcare setting? Which apps do you care to look at? Because picture this, right? Like, if the back end is set up for this micro app ecosystem, then everything becomes a competition on apps. And as we know from a free market perspective, the best one will win, right? And all we need to do is to enhance that ecosystem and let them compete to the best way they can.
So let's pull the reins back a little bit. What's your backstory?
Oh, shit.
Okay. Yeah, and were you a Bitcoiner?
I was
in your pre-Nostr life.
So I think you know, people like to talk when was the time that, you know, the Nostr bug, or the, say, the public key cryptography bug, have bitten them in the past. And the story for me is pretty much similar to many other folks. We saw Bitcoin happening. I was, at the time, I was like, even before, back in 2005 or so, I was working on a few sovereign computing projects back in Brazil. And we were trying to essentially recreate the internet in a way that you could share your internet connection with friends, right? So everything, you could just enable your friend to use an internet connection, because, you know, at the time, the internet was just so costly. So one person could just buy the access and then allow all the friends to just access the web through them. And so we did create a few little apps that enabled that. And the whole point was, you know, the ISPs at the time were blocking you so much, were controlling you so much, that we wanted to have the freedom of at least hide, you know, from the ISPs behind one of our friends to let us do the things we wanted to do online. You know, Bitcoin came over, showed us the importance of public key cryptography. And I think this whole notion of having something that runs forever without having a developer maintaining it was a new thing for computer scientists in general. So it was very exciting from a CS standpoint that you could just, you know, that the incentives of the system, of the Bitcoin system, were set in such a way that, you know, if all the miners go away, one computer somewhere in Africa can keep the chain going, and they're going to get all the Bitcoins, and they're going to make money because they're getting the Bitcoins and so on. So So the chain keeps going no matter what happens to the internet, to the world in general, is a unique proposition. Then, like everybody else went through, we went through hard, too hard into the, you know, let's install every single application that we know into a blockchain, and let's try to ship everything integrated with the blockchain. Later with Ethereum and so on, try to create new coins and new ways to use the blockchain, new ways to document that that a real life meaning into the chain through, I don't know, land registration or all the other, you know, shit coins that we have seen around. And none of that really worked well. And then Nostr came around and Nostr said, you know what? You guys are all right. Like, you can build all of that. You just don't need a chain. You just don't, like, this idea of putting everything into just one place that was designed to be scarce doesn't really make sense to any application. Because if you want usage, you need to be able to scale in storage. You need to be able to get more people into the chain. And since most apps do want more usage and they do want more storage, the idea of a blockchain just doesn't really make any sense. And Nostr came in and said, you don't need a blockchain. You can just have these relays out there and you have the signed messages individually and you don't need to stack them. You don't need mining to choose which ones of them are real, right? You can picture miners as the power of censorship on Bitcoin, right? They decide what goes into the chain and what doesn't. So if you had a social media network, any type of mining activity would become that sensor, that player that could censor transactions, or in our case, censor posts from the web. And Nostr simply said, you know, you don't need any of that. You can just store things on relay. They don't need to be sorted. They don't need to be aligned. They don't need to be into blocks. So you have the signatures, you have the transactions, you have the things that you can't change, but you don't need to connect them to each other as much as you do when you're dealing with money. So leave Bitcoin alone dealing with money and let's build everything else on Nostr. This is more or less my story. And I think it's the story that almost everybody that went through the multiple stages on the Bitcoin side that we had to live through it to realize, you know, how can we use each one of these technologies to our own benefit?
Yeah, and it's amazing that the creator of Nostr, Fiat Joff, was also in part of a group that created the LNURL right. portion, which meshes so well with Nostr.
And
the Zaps were never integrated.
Yeah, and on Lightning they had the same conundrum, I guess, of trying to use the Lightning onion network to transfer any other information that is not a payment, right? I think we had two or three projects over there that just tried to do blogging and other activities through the Lightning network. And the pitch was very exciting from, especially like from an investor standpoint, that you're just going to, you know, since every hop requires a little fee to sustain itself, it would make sense to just say, you know what? The cost of this new network is already baked in. So if you're going to use this platform, you're going to have this little cost just because to pay for the servers that are out there. And you could just transfer regular blog posts through the Lightning Network. It turns out the Onion Network designed for Lightning is not as good for the general posts, and if you use it too much, it just doesn't scale super well. It works well for payments and the things that Lightning was designed for, but for everybody, or everything else, is a little bit complicated and wouldn't really work. But the idea that came from this blockchain mindset, where you know you can just put your code up there and it's just going to run forever, and while it's running, it's collecting some type of coin back to you. Because you know the operation of the system is already baking that in, that incentive in, was really exciting. So we have had that kind of proposition multiple times in Bitcoin now, And I think we got to a point where Nostr is just that solution we were looking for all these years. It's just, you know, a better way to do everything we wanted to do. And it turns out that the only thing we needed is just to give everybody a public key and making sure they can control their keys. And from that forward, everything else is kind of self-managed, right? You just need to have a relay, a place to store temporarily your notes, another place to store your notes forever. And when you have all of that, everything is just, you know, let's design the right payloads, the right information, the right formats inside the protocol to do all of these different things that we could do just because you have a signed key now.
Right. So you joined Nostr from my Nostr.band records January 17th of 22. That's like 11 months. So you're pre-Jack. You're minus 11. What was it like back then? What drew you to, I mean, I guess tell me the story how you figured out about it all the way to where you decided to be Nostr's chief Android officer.
So it was all about at the time, one of the early clients called Enigma, which was basically like a Telegram for Nostr. And it was so fun just because the website, you could just go into the website at any point in time and you would talk to people that were there, very similar to how IRC worked in, back in the early days. And you could just create a profile and sign up and use, I think we already had an extension at the time, but maybe not. But it was so easy and so simple. And so the people around it that were on that website were so interesting that you just, you know, I post a few things, it stayed around for a while, I created multiple keys and so on. And I think that is where, and at the same time, picture this, right? At the same time, I was doing decentralized identity protocol. So the DID stuff that people talk about, I was on that side. I was on the like web 5 of the, you know, of the protocols. So I could look at both protocols with hard eyes of having experience on both and say, you know what, Nostr is just better. The DID one is better from an engineering standpoint where you can pretty much do whatever you want to do in that system. But exactly because you can do whatever you want to do, it leads to lots of places where you do not have the interoperability we have on Nostr right now. Because Nostr, we were forced to get together and figure out how to transfer some of these events that we're doing these days. You know, there is just one way to transfer a live stream between two clients. There is just one way to post a single note. There is just one way to post, I don't know, a zap. On DIDs, each player can have their own ways. So the interoperability on that platform is not as high. It is as decentralized as Nostr is, but it's just in a very different way. And after spending 2 or 3 years over there, I couldn't do this anymore. I was like, yeah, this is never going to go forward just because people are not coming together to build on top of each other. They are each building their own silos, decentralized silos inside that specification that would never really talk to one another. And Nostr was just the opposite of that.
And today. I find it fascinating. And Avi, with our show with Rabble, where we had kind of a history of Twitter, but an overall theme of like cypherpunk mentality too, kind of the 80s, 90s. I hear IRC come up time and time again, but just the overall theme, I think, is the internet was pretty much hijacked over time. And a lot of the way things worked in a decentralized manner, privacy, everything was hijacked. And we kind of have this subculture that's trying to rebuild it using what we used to know or what we used to do. Do you feel like that's a theme with Nostr?
Yeah, and It actually ties up with our earlier discussion about super apps. I think the web, this idea that the web went through like massive companies that would build these applications for everybody to play with the web, because the web was so hard to play in the early days. So we kind of needed these like massive corporations that we still have today, but they're less effective now and we're trying to break them up. But just to get people on board with the concept of the web, right? And it's similar to the notion of within Nostr right now with the notion of super apps. We need super apps to get that initial boost in the way to use the protocol. But hopefully as we move forward, we start breaking those up as well. And this includes Amethyst as well. And, you know, by breaking them up, we're just going to create more opportunities for more interesting, more truthful connections between humans.
Yeah. Makes sense, Vitor. So let's just bring this back to that point in the timeline. Early 2022, you discover Nostr playing around with Enigma, which I think was there, was dying out around the time QW and I joined, which is right after Jack made that announcement.
We bought the top.
We bought on Enigma for sure. But Amethyst was something that came a little after the Jack wave. Isn't that right, Vitor?
I'd say together with the Jack wave. So we started in December 2022. I think the peak of that wave was in March, maybe 2023. And so our first version was January 10th, I believe, that we released. And that already had, that was so funny because in 5 days we had an entire Twitter clone. And with all the, you know, likes and replies and so on that you would usually have, we didn't have Zaps back then yet, because Zaps were a new thing. But everything was already running as if it was really like just a Twitter clone. And to me, it was so shocking that I could build a clone that, you know, a company would later be valued by, you know, by Elon for $45 billion in just 5 days alone by myself. It was just so weird. And it was a clear sign that, you know, there was something here. And I think everybody at the time, even people that were not devs looking at, you know, how the protocol works, we all kind of realized what it was, which is just this idea of public key cryptography, that as long as you give the key to a user and you allow that person to control the key, everything else is just a matter of building this web of trust between keys of users and figuring out how to do it. So it came, I think, a little bit before. And that is, I think, one of the main reasons Amethyst became this massive player on the Android side. But we still have to see another wave like that. I don't think we have had any wave since that time of new users coming in. And even though we had waves of, you know, the Brazilians coming in because of the many things that happened over that country in the past 2 years or so. Some other regions, the Chinese are coming in, the Japanese are coming in for different reasons. But it's not a wave that was as big as the wave that Jack brought in.
Do you see that? I mean, you're a guy with a PhD in computer science. You worked on sovereign computing. You worked on decentralized ID. You're a CEO or CTO. Or was it CTO, Vitor, of a health tech startup? Was it a logical career progression to become the creator of a social media app?
No, I think that's why it's, you know, it's so shocking to me and to everybody else, because I was fully into medical devices before Amethyst. I was the CEO for iNetra, which is this really boring medical device company that, yeah, we used new technology. We did a vision test for glasses on a VR device, on a virtual reality device. And we sold it for over 15 years or so to doctors and so on. So we had a good small businesses, good small business until the pandemic hit. And all of our customers went bankrupt. So I had to switch to something else. And I think because I had that experience with medical devices and health data in general, I was like, it was very clear to me that something is fundamentally wrong in healthcare that just doesn't allow even a company like us that is addressing a market that is, you know, vision for glasses, which is one of the easiest in healthcare. It's one that has, you know, 4 billion people using glasses and contact lenses out there. So it's about half of the population needs some type of vision correction, needs to go to the doctor every 2 years or so to renew that vision correction. Even at that scale, we couldn't scale the medical device company as we thought we could because everything is so locked up to the regular players in the market. So at the time, I had the decision of, you know, do I want to go for another fundraise and develop a new version of my devices and kind of keep the company going from that perspective? And my decision was very clear. It was like, there's no point on doing any development for medical devices because there is no way to grow as a company. You can stay and have a very good business for yourself and some friends and some colleagues that are working together at the company. But you don't make a company to become just a small business. You know, if you're not having sufficient revenues to make it a large, case of success, then all you're doing is adding risk to yourself, to your life, without having any of the potential rewards from that work. So for me, it became very clear as we navigated this that we, you know, something had to be done. And the social media app was my way out, was saying, you know what, I'm just going to switch to something completely different, see what happens and see what new ideas I can think about in an ecosystem, in a place, in a market that, you know, truly allows people to just develop whatever they want, as opposed to being locked down by, you know, every single entity in every country out there on the regular medical device side.
Yeah, well, that does make sense.
Now that you think about it, right?
Right. So let's talk a little bit about Amethyst. Obviously, probably from what I've heard and the screenshots I've seen, the most feature-rich Nostra client out there. What are some of the features in Amethyst that you're especially fond of or proud of?
Well, the biggest one that we think is by far the most important moving forward is the marketplace. So we do have just a regular listing that you can do, like on Facebook Marketplace. You can do the same, just post a product and you can sell your own stuff without having to set up any online store, any, you know, fancy payment methods and ordering systems and so on. You can just do it from the phone. That is one of the biggest benefits and one of the features that really brings a lot of value back to the network and to the user, because if you can allow them to exchange any type of good, they can start to, you know, imagine a living from Nostr, from their participation in the network. And the funny thing about imagining a living through Nostr is that they actually don't need to use Amethyst if they want to do that, right? They can just use any other client that provides the same marketplace, potentially with features that align with what they want to do better. But having that component in every client essentially means that your product is visible on every client. And so we try to make, on the Amethyst side, we try to make those things really, really visible so that we can get some growth to that ecosystem because of the exposure to users. Which is one of the reasons why we decided to do a super app from an Amethyst standpoint. It's just like we just need eyes on everything that is going on Nostr. And if we can add eyes there, we can help the apps that are specialized into those subsystems to develop themselves forward, to get grants, get funding, and push it forward. They just need users, and we can give them the users we have. So Marketplace is a big one for us. It's a similar idea to DVMs, the data vending machines, but the data vending machines is from a virtual standpoint, right? You can offer services that are virtual and people can buy. And those services can be as simple as, just go out there in the Relay ecosystem, download it all, and make it a feed that I would like from the random posts that are out there. You know, that is a service that you can provide, that you can offer as a DVM that works today on Amethyst, that you can just get people to pay for. So those things that require transactions, that require people or that may allow people to imagine a living from the system, really excite me. And and having that together with the social layer just facilitates everything, because you can get a lot of trust going on. Like, I sold my Pixel 7, I believe, on Amethyst Marketplace. And the person that bought it was the biggest transaction at the time for the marketplace, paid $300 in e-cash, which was also new. But they only did that because they knew who I was. They knew that, I wouldn't ship them brick of a on the mail. So it's having that connection between the social layer and the marketplace enables so many different business that you could easily imagine offering credit lines for people that if they know, who is selling, they know who is buying, they know they're not going to be they're not fraudsters out there. You can easily do several little businesses providing credit and other services for them just to help the sale to go through. And so I think those things are the ones that are really excited about on Amethyst, and we really want to do more of it. We just did a new NIP for a type of virtual service that you don't need to request. So with DVMs, the data vending machines, you have to always request, right? Go there and give me a new feed. Give me a new feed. Every time it's a new feed, I pay, 10 sats to the machine that is doing this. I wanted to imagine something that is automated. It's just like it keeps running and you pay monthly for the service via some other means. But then that service will send you Nostr events every time it gets updated. And then you can get other types of things. For instance, if you want just a simple rank of users out there, or if you want to know what each user is talking about on a regular basis, say, I talk more about Nostr and Bitcoin and some memes in my feed, those three things can come back and the users can choose and they can categorize those. And that doesn't need to be a DVM that you request and all the time. It can just be something that runs all the time and you're paying for another means. And the client just receives new things as they happen, right? You don't need to request. It just shows up almost as if it was a notification in the client. And you can just see things going up, things going down, new topics appearing. So those are the things that really excite me to just get the ecosystem of Nostr transactions going forward.
With the marketplace specifically, you were talking about trusted sales and so on. I mean, that really comes back to Web of Trust, right? And I think the Web of Trust as a concept is probably one of the most underrated concepts within Nostr. And I think we're going to see that play out, not just in these types of marketplaces, but well beyond that.
Yeah. And Web of Trust does have it. We use that term a lot to mean so many different things. So in the end, we are going to have hundreds of different algorithms that will figure out different rankings for that Web of Trust that we can use. So we will need to figure out a way to communicate all those options back to users. And to make sure, that they can either select the best one or they understand which options they have to select which algorithm can best serve what they are trying to do from a web of trust standpoint, you know. And just picture this, the easy way is like you can just have one that, you know, looks at your follows and your follows follows. So you have a two-layer system that looks forward and downloads all their posts. But you can also have something else that compiles an entire view of the network and say, you know what, forget about your follows. I from your follows, I can get to this other person down in China or in India or in some other place that you two would be completely disconnect otherwise. But because you were saying the same things all the time, I'm going to put you together in this graph and going to say that this connection is more important than your follows. So there are multiple ways to do Web of Trust. And it all depends on, you know, what are you looking for on each of the clients that will be out there.
What do you think about the approach that some folks are taking on attestations? You know, there's the proof of place SNP that's cooking right now, right? And I know you posted something recently about trusted assertions on in a slightly different context, right? But more generally, I think what you said is generalizable to attestations about people or places as well. What do you think of that concept as playing into the Web of Trust?
So that's a layer that we still need to really think through in Nostr, because for a very long time, especially with the role in Bitcoin that we have had, we were following this mantra of, you know, don't trust, verify, right? Like it's always don't trust, verify, and trust is something negative almost all the time. But in a social layer, your close friends are most likely trusted, are most likely, you know, you're going to just have a multi-layer level of trust in your friends, in your family members. Each one, you can trust them for different things. And that NIP and the proof of places proposition is kind of the same. You're like, you choose another NPub that is doing some service for you, that is picking a few, I don't know, good products out there that you might want to buy. And you trust that NPub making that choice for you. And so that is what this trust assertions NIP is trying to do. It's trying to get us into a system where we start labeling which other accounts you trust for specific things. And you might trust your friend for, you know, you might trust your brother with your life, but you don't trust your brother with your finances, for instance, right? So you can choose, you can pick and choose where you place the trust. You can trust, say, Odell to choose a good hardware wallet for you, but you don't trust Odell in choosing your vegetables for the morning, you know, morning breakfast. So those are the things that we need to bake into this network to just get to the next level, because that is where most of the simplification will come from our regular users. We don't verify everything in life. We trust other people. Most people have never seen Amethyst code, but they trust me in doing a code that is not going to steal from them, right? So that's the thing that we need to add more into the platform and start in these two propositions. Just start that work of, you know, figuring out how to label those things and how to make sure users understand how to use each one of them and how to label them correctly.
And pretty soon, Vitor, we're going to have to grapple with proof of doctor, right? How do you know someone who says they're a doctor on Nostr is actually a doctor?
Yep. And together with that proposal, we can have it in so many different ways, right? We would have the Association for Doctors saying that, you know, these are the doctors participating in the association, and we credential them in some different ways, and we do, you know, yearly tests and so on, the way they do today. We can have your friends mentioning, you know, I visited this doctor in the past 3 months. I know they exist. I know they are good. So because of my friend that just went there, I'm going to use that doctor as well. So there is you have the two types of, you know, top-down kind of systems that can be coded into Nostr and could be it could add to the information you want, and you have the bottom-up system from your friends doing the same thing as well. So, you know, relating each, of course, if they want to, right, this is assuming they want to share that with other folks. You can use that information to figure out, again, your web of trust and which people you trust that are telling you the truth, right? Like the association of doctors or your friend that just went there. Do you trust, you know, your government or a company, or do you trust a local shop nearby? Do you, you know, sometimes you trust the country, sometimes you just trust a shop. And it really, there's not really a, like a perfect solution for these things. As long as we have all that information coded in Nostr, we can always have systems that are processing that information, and they are relating that back to users and let the users then make the choice if they trust that information or not.
Yeah, makes sense. So what other Nostr features are you looking to integrate into Amethyst in the future? So you did mention that Nests is coming once you figure out the audio issue, right? Yep. What else?
The next one then will be pretty much... So there are new systems that are we're going to do with the this Outbox model trust, the Outbox model scheme that we are slowly transitioning into. And one of them is a mix between the MLS, the new DM system that Jeff G is proposing, that would allow us to do very large group chats in a way that each message is properly encrypted without having, like, you know, we have some group chats today that, but they're either public or they're encrypted with just one password, and then that password is shared among all of the members of that group. So if the their client decides, or if they decide to just copy and paste that secret somewhere else, then that whoever sees that secret can access that group. So it's not really a really good encryption, but it is out there and it works today. With what Jeff G is proposing, then we could have a better system. And if you do that together with an Outbox model, now you can have the same group of people debating a given topic, right? Imagine like a 10,000 people, you know, Facebook page about, you know, a disease, for instance, and they are all they all have that disease, and they're trying to figure out the way through life with that disease. And so it's all private, it's all very sensitive. And now you can have in such a way that they're not even using the same server, they're using multiple relays. And each of the users is just pinging the relays that they think might have part of that group. So in such a way that the relays themselves, you know, since they are just regular servers, relays could be tracking most of that that conversation, even though it's private, it's encrypted. They can track the metadata, they can track the IP that is coming in, they can track other things if they decide to. But if you merge the two, then you can, MLS with the Outbox model, then you can have a system where you can use so many relays that the conversation is so spread into multiple servers that there is no really good way for each one of them to figure things out without colluding with each other, which hopefully we don't see it as much as we as much in the future. But so that those are the things that are like that are very complicated, but they excited me a lot just because there is no really central point on anything. Like if you use, you know, I don't know if you know today, if you use a simple XChat or Signal or many of these applications that do provide end-to-end encryption, usually they are all fixed in their own servers. And yeah, they might allow you to, you know, fork the code and change the server, or maybe change the server in the UI, but that is so rare to see that they are still super centralized. So, you know, with Nostr, we can really picture a system where each one of us have our own relays, and we use our own relays to reassemble an entire group of people that are placing or are talking about the same thing. Without anyone knowing what the same thing is, without anyone knowing that we are together somehow. into this system. So that is very something for the long term, but it really excites me because I don't think there is anything else out there that can get anywhere near this level of privacy on any other technology that we have seen.
Mm-hmm. And Avi, I'm going to step in for just 1 second because the outbox model, I'm a gentle pleb. What the hell does that mean? It may be in a layman terms.
This is why I was figuring out how to explain this whole thing.
And I'm familiar with Jeff G trying to create white noise, which I'm excited.
Yeah, exactly.
About.
So it's picture this. There is a legacy model, and there is something that we call now outbox model. Some people call gossip model and so on, but it came from gossip, the client that Mike created. And the difference between the legacy and the outbox is that the legacy, you have a fixed set of relays that you always access. You know, this, if you go to Amethyst or Deimos or Primal, like you have your relay list somewhere in there. And that relay list is fixed. The app is always connected to those relays. On the outbox module, the app will figure out which relay to connect to as dynamically, as things happen. So picture this for your feed. Instead of using the 13 relays you have on the list, you're going to reach to each one of those follows that you follow, figure out which relay they are using. It doesn't matter if it's a personal relay, if it's a big relay, if it's a private relay, it doesn't really matter. It figures out which relay they are using and brings it back, and then compiles all that information from every follow that you have into this massive list of relays that each one has a different note from a different user. And the app will ping each one of them to download the post directly from the source in some way. So that's the difference between the legacy model and the outbox model. The legacy is fixed in a list that you have to use for everybody. And in that model, if two people want to see each other, they have to have at least one relay in both lists, in each one of the lists that they control, so that they have something to share. Post on. In the new model, the outbox model, then that is not needed anymore. The app kind of figures it out and knows where to get each one of the different posts that we see out there. So if it's a marketplace, it's something different than it's a kind of one note. If it's a, those are all different systems that the app will need to code to know where to get which relay will have those posts for each one of the users that are out there. So you could imagine a network where each one of us just uses a personal relay. We don't have large centralized relays anymore. We only have our relay, which only has our data, things assigned by us. So this means that every app, if you have, 1,000 follows, you're going to connect to 1,000 different relays to download the information from each one of them. So there is really no way to censor any of this. There is no centralized player anywhere. Not even the relay that we know and love today will be there.
Isn't this computationally expensive, Vitor? It almost sounds like how many Gnostic clients that don't have a caching service, how they calculate follow counts, right? Just reach out and try and ping all the users.
Yeah.
Wouldn't this be slow and expensive if you have to do this for every single event that you're posting?
Yes, it will. And I think that is why it's taking so long for clients to migrate from the legacy model to the new model, to the outbox model. It's just because the operations behind it require you to know a lot from your follows, to have some updated information about where they store their posts and how they do this, especially if you are doing a super app like we do. Because now you not only have all the follows for your regular feed, but you also need to figure out your follows for the marketplace, your follows for the TikTok stream, your follows for the live streams. Right? Those are all different. So when you do a super app, the complexity explodes on itself, and you just have much more to do. But as we navigate the system and as we build new apps, new micro apps to help us organize that information, I do think it's going to get easier over time. Most of, if you use any web development technology right now, for instance, you can already use a library called NDK, which has the Outbox model baked into it. So the developer doesn't really need to worry about which relays to reach out to get posts from. It's all kind of automated and solved for the app developer that will just call the screens. But again, those things are we need to develop those things, and we need to develop in each language, in each platform, in each environment to make the best out of it and have caching systems that truly make the use of the system like that, interesting for the user.
So, this is potentially a costly exercise, right, from a compute cost standpoint, potentially even storage. When do you think Amethyst is going to have some kind of profit to offset that? Ooh. And what would that look like?
Yes. Profit?
The P word, what's hard. That?
Yeah, that's the keyword, right? So I think the way I have looked at the revenue model for Nostra apps have always been based on, are you creating a writing app or a reading app, right? So if you're creating something to just watch content, like a TikTok player that you don't really have any opportunity to post content, that type of client will be a race to the bottom most of the time. So it's going to be really hard to figure out revenue models for that component. But if you are on the right side, if you're creating content, if you are, and it doesn't matter if it's a short post, if it's a long, if it's a blog, or if it's a TikTok video that you have, several things going on there, the client that makes that work really simple and easy to use wins. And it wins in the form that it can actually charge the user that is creating that content for the benefit of having all those features that just enhances that content for that user. So pretty much like, all podcasters will buy a microphone, people that produce content will buy something that makes their content better. So that is that the writing client is a lot easier to monetize. The reading client is just very hard. The super app idea really doesn't have a model. Like, there is nothing that you can run just the numbers and reach to a conclusion that it would work from a revenue standpoint. So that's one of the reasons why, like, when I talk about, let's build and recommend people building clients, I usually simplify to, like, keep it small, keep it a mini client or a micro client, because when you go super, there are very few models that truly work. And we're exploring one on Amethyst. For those who don't know, I am an OpenSats grantee. And I think because I am an OpenSats grantee, I have to test, my duty is to test new revenue models and use that money that is sustaining myself and some of the team to explore new ways of making that money. And we are going strictly with value for value models, where, in every new release, there is a little pop-up on Amethyst that asks for donation in terms of a zap the devs button, that you can just zap each one of the devs that worked in that specific release directly. So it doesn't go through me. The money doesn't come to me first and then I redistribute them. It goes straight to them and straight into their wallets. And the number of sats that we receive through that feature today is about $400, $500 a month or so. And for, the amount of users we have online these days, it is actually a big number. If you scale it up, and even if you consider that those are all, super optimists about Nostr, they want to donate more than what they should. Even if you parse all of that, if you scale Amethyst to where it should be in terms of social media apps, it's really possible to use that model and keep, 100 people company or 100 devs company, I would say, because it would only be devs at that point, devs and designers. And it would really work out from an application development, from a career standpoint. But again, that's a new model. Lots of things are not tested. We don't know if the donation idea will survive in the long run. It's a lot easier to charge for a service than to ask for a donation. So we'll see if it works. We have 2 years to find that out. And, you know, I'm certainly going to report back if that does work. But that is one of the ways to do it. If you think any of the other models, subscription services, you know, rev share with the Zaps, the average Zap is not big enough for the rev share to matter, right? So it doesn't matter how well you scale that model, because the amount of Zaps the amount of sats per Zap is so small, like 10 sats, 12 sats, whatever. If you take a share of that and just combine it all, even if you explode your app to 8 billion people in the world, it's not enough. So that model to me doesn't work at all in that spectrum. And then the subscription side is really about like how are people looking at their subscriptions? Are they still liking that model or not? You know, can they take yet another subscription? Can they do one subscription for each micro app in Nostr? Or how many of them will choose? Because that is where that model breaks down. Like if you have every micro app with a given subscription, users are not going to like to pay even like $1 a month to say 25 apps. It's just going to be too much for people. So that is the limit you're exploring, and a limit there that we don't know yet what it is. But I'm sure people will try just because it's the easiest model, especially for investors to go for.
I like the fact that you said, you know, $400 or $500 right now a month at its current scale. I've always thought value for value and micro zaps and everything will add up with scale. That's something I see in the Wave Lake Fountain, some of the more normalized value for value apps today.
And keep in mind, right, like all of this, none of these apps, even Fountain and the guys who are at the forefront of helping creators create and getting their fair share of the sats for themselves, I think are still just starting this game of figuring out how do creators play this game and make a living out of Nostr. So even for them, even if their revenue today is small, I wouldn't discount that model because it could be really, really powerful for just to have that system going. You know, I was playing around the idea of a payroll system on Nostr. So I pictured this instead of doing, you know, 10 sat zaps, we start doing 10 million zaps, single zaps, because people are now receiving their paychecks through Nostr, right? So, or even just Lightning, you don't need to have the zapping system in there. But like once you get to that level of size per zap, now you can start thinking about different models. And, you know, rev share then starts to work. But until that point, then it's just not gonna matter that much.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're a boating accident a support group essentially. So these sats can be a lot bigger if we all weren't in that boating accident together. But that's interesting stuff. I mean, I think ultimately we're just trying to figure everything out. Again, ingredients and chefs. And also kind of that Fountain model where you promote podcasts. Someone that creates an app. Now, being a super app like Amethyst, you could have a marketplace of apps down the road where someone wants to promote their app. It's something where there's a lot that can be manifested. It's just a matter of drawing enough people and creating the market.
And I do think, you know, if you have been on Twitch and you have seen all those things that subscribers and viewers of the live stream can do to send money to the owner of the channel directly, or you can buy subs for other people, you know, to the sense that you can actually help the community grow in that sense. Those are models that I think creators will really like. to see out there. And because those things play with our own, you know, sense of values, sense of community, mm-hmm. sense of, you know, what I'm getting out of this. Yeah. And if we can have more of that, that experimentation, especially, I do think, you know, moving forward, we're going to see many different ways of doing this.
And being on the Amethyst side, you have a little bit more rope than on the iOS App Store side.
To show new things. Yeah, but keep in mind, right? Like it, Fountain can't see everything else that is going on Nostr, right? It, like mm-hmm. they use that word of, you know, that's not why Fountain was made of in certain features. But maybe there is a way that they say, you know what? For this other feature, I want to have everything. And I want to have Fountain with, I don't know, blog posts or you know, some other type of service just because it fits so well with the idea of podcasts or the idea of audio that they have today. Imagine, I don't know, paying extra for lyrics that gets translated into each one of the languages out there. And maybe there is a way for you to contribute back and change it. And, you know, or if you were an artist, you can now, in your live streaming, you can have your viewers participating on the song that you're writing. There are so many options out there when you attach some form of payment to this that it just becomes a very dynamic system that you can just, for app developers, you don't need to just choose, you know, a super app or a mini app. You can add the things that make sense to your app and try to get the best user experience, the best value for creators out there.
Incentives. Well, to turn the page, talk about NIP 82. Why did you create it?
So the 82 is the medical data NIP. And the point of 82 is simply to get data out of the silos we see today in healthcare, right? So today we have, especially if you think about the US or in some places that the government doesn't control everything. That's the average, unfortunately. But in places where corporations and other healthcare players, they control your data, that data is siloed into their service. And it's as a user, as a patient, is just, even as a doctor, is really, really hard to get the data out. And NIP 82 was the first design that would flip the system on its head. So instead of, because of the Outbox model, I, as a Nostr user, I can choose where my data is saved. I can say, you know what, doctor, instead of using your server or maybe together with your server, you are also going to send me or my server a copy of my data every time I visit your office. And I can, if I am visiting two doctors, the two doctors are in different systems. They don't see each other's information. Now they have a point where, well, I can just ping the patient's own server if I have it really easy to access. Then I can download what the other doctor is thinking about this patient, and I can refine my medical judgment based on what the other doctor is doing. So it becomes a point that I think for doctors, nurses, and every provider out there, it becomes really important to them because they start seeing what everybody else is doing with the same patient that it's in front of them. And, you know, we know that Nostr works in that sense because our notes and our social media stuff right now is already on our servers, and the Outbox model is not going anywhere. We're just going to be improved. It only made sense to get, you know, to say, you know what, let's put the entire social media thing to the side. Let's use the social network, the social layer of Nostr to try to do healthcare instead. So you might decide as a patient, you might decide to reuse the same keys you have for the social media to use for your healthcare information, or you might create a new one to just do healthcare so you are a little bit safer. You know, if the social media key leaks, no one can find your healthcare stuff, and vice versa. And just let them choose where to save the data and how the data is being shared with people. Because today, it's either in the hands of massive governments like in India, Brazil, China, most of Europe, and in Canada, the data is controlled by the government. And every doctor has to send that information back to the government in order to provide you, say, a prescription, because the pharmacist is going to consult with the government's server in order to see if you can or cannot have that medication. Or in case of the US, Mexico, and some other players that do not really have a national health system, the data is then with companies, and it's very likely that they're just selling your data for their own profit without you even knowing about it. And the data that goes from, say, the prescription from your doctor to the pharmacist in the US travels through five different companies. All of them can see the data with, you know, it's not encrypted in any way. They can see everything, and they can decide to share with others if they want to. But, you know, in the end, the pharmacist will use the system to get the prescription from the doctor. And because they use that system, kind of everybody else in the middle of this gets to take a little share of profits based on your data, which you're not really controlling, right? It's just not like you can't really have any ownership of data in that system. So hopefully 82 creates this new environment where doctors, providers, nurses, they can just write out their notes in the patient's own relay and use that relay to just stack all the work, all the healthcare work that has been done on the patient for his entire life cycle. And the patient then decides when to share each one of those individual data points to a new doctor or to the government if they want to report something, whatever it is. But it's the patient that makes the decision to share, not, you know, the system as a whole, the government, or anybody else.
It, like 3 months ago, I was reading something about an optometrist, or maybe an optometrist. And you were talking about eyeglasses before. Was that you that maybe might be doing alpha testing with kind of like something lightweight, like optometrist prescription?
So the first for Nosfabrica, the first system that, or the first demo really that we created, is just a prescription sender. So if you have any knowledge on healthcare systems, you know that the screen for the doctor is a huge mess, right? There are a lot of fields, there is a lot of configuration everywhere, and it's just very, very complicated to even get to a point that they can actually use the system. With Noster, they just load a web page that only does one thing. It just sends the prescription. It doesn't allow you to read all the prescriptions. It doesn't show you what you have sent. It doesn't do anything else. It just opens the field and only the fields you need for that prescription. And it as soon as you hit send, it goes to, say, the DM of the patient. And that's the system we started up on Nosfabrica, which is just, it is so simple. It, like, every doctor looks at it, it's like, this is so amazing because I don't need to think. I don't need to build, you know, the system around it. I don't need to know where to store, because it's being stored at the patient's own relay. And they choose if they want to delete the data or not, if they want to keep it or not. It's not my responsibility as a provider to think about that IT, you know, infrastructure that hospitals usually have to, you know, protect and figure out what they want to do, and just add so much cost to it. It becomes so simple. It becomes so easy to use. And because it is Noster and this notion of micro apps, it becomes so easy for developers then to come in and say, I don't want to make a prescription sender. I want to make an app that, I don't know, just collects all the prescriptions and displays in a nice graph for my user. That's all it does, right? Like, if it is useful, people will have that app in their phone and just watch, you know, something grow or decrease over time, right? So it's really, really interesting to see this entire space wrapping their heads around a new concept where the hospitals and the government and none of the regular players, the insurance companies, none of them need to think about their IT infrastructure anymore. And so, you know, this $1 trillion industry kind of ceases to exist because we decentralized everything. And like, now it's all in the hands of the patients, and they decide what to do with their data. If they want to have it, they can. If they want to delete everything, they can. If they don't want to save it anywhere else and just on their phones, they can. So and none of this is, none of this requires extra complication. It's just the regular Noster that we all know and love.
And Vitor, I was...
Welcome back, Avi.
Yes.
Avi missed the most important part of this podcast.
Yeah, he probably doesn't even understand about healthcare and Nasdaq.
Oh, yeah, no, it's nothing.
Terrible time to miss, Avi. You need to catch up.
I actually had to reboot my computer to get Nest to work.
We're so early.
I don't know if you touched upon this while I was chasing the technical gremlins around, but just for full disclosure, right, Vitor, John Gordon, and I have started Nost Fabrica, this healthcare data on Nostra company. So we've just launched it, and we're looking to tackle some of these interesting use cases. And one of them, I think Vitor was talking about, with the optometrist, the laser eyes app. But Vitor, from your prior background in healthcare, I know you touched upon this a little bit from a medical devices standpoint, but more broadly, right, what were the key issues that you saw with the existing legacy health tech system?
Mostly that is too complicated to use and to set up. Like, if you talk to any doctor, any provider, any person that is really doing a service to patients or to another person out there, they would tell you the same thing. This whole thing is way too complicated. It's like, why am I even writing things down in this way, in this form, in this poor system? Even if you use the top-notch state-of-the-art facility, it's still too complicated. It's still too much work. It's still too difficult. Sometimes because it is the system's own fault and the software developers behind it. In some other cases, because regulations and insurance companies kind of require them to do so. But either way, the issue is that because it is so centralized, because it is so focused into just one point of just starting all that data in the way that, all these entities can understand, it becomes really hard to create, really hard to maintain, really hard to protect, to secure against attacks, and so on. Imagine that the honeypot that all this data together in the same company makes, like any CEO should go crazy on this, like just trying to imagine, if a hacker comes in and steals everything, it's like, what's the liability for the company, for me personally as a CEO? And there's so much going on. And if you saw what Jack Dorsey was saying with Twitter and, all the pressure the public system can make on a company like Twitter, just for the regular, kind of worthless freedom of speech rights, right? People like just talking their shit, and you're not trying to sell anything based on that information. You're trying to make any money out of this. Now picture the same level of pressure, but with information that is reliable, that is trustworthy, that can be used for many, say, drug developments out there, that most people, most of these big pharma companies would want to pay a lot of money to get access to. And in fact, they do pay a lot of money these days to get access to these things. So imagine that pressure when you compound the idea that each one of those, Twitter posts, in case of Jack, is now worth a lot of money to those companies. You not only have the government that is trying to make their own pressures on the system, when correctly and incorrectly, and you also have a lot of companies that are willing to pay real money on the table for the same information. And if we can decentralize from those CEOs, we can make them less of a liability, both for themselves and for patients and everybody else. I think the better it gets. And, it's all about, can we make that work at that scale of healthcare, right? Can we work at that level of, amount of data and the amount of content, the amount of people around trying to change the same record, the same medical record at any given point in time? We'll see. But I think that is a very good start that we can get really far from just that basic, Nostr NIP.
And then what do you see as Nostr Fabrica's role in addressing a lot of these issues and tackling that pot of gold, right, of health data.
I mean, frankly, I think the main goal for the company is just to break it down, right? To break it down into as many applications as we can. We don't necessarily need to develop everything ourselves. We don't necessarily need to host anything for users. We can build almost everything in an open source way that just allows anybody else to, you know, code and tweak things around, and you know, use our code base as a basis for new systems. Design their own interfaces and so on. If we get to the point that the company breaks everything down in ways more people can participate in this ecosystem, the better it gets, right? And picture this from a regulatory standpoint. Like if you are a dev today and you are developing a medical system, you have to go through lots of training and lots of regulatory certifications just to get the system out. Because you are controlling or you have some form of access to real data, to real hostile data that you can, you know, you can make a mistake and you can leak that data. So they make every developer out there go through some certifications to avoid that from happening. In Noster, you don't really control any data. You just make the application and there is no regulatory oversight to just making the code that then somebody else can use in their own database, because you know the regulatory people know that there is no risk in just developing the system. It's just like there's nothing there, there's nothing to leak, right? So picture that from a single developer point of view. I now can go out there and I can do a nice little screen for dentists that can do a nice evaluation of your x-rays. I can use AI and so on. But because my app is just using the data that is on the user's own server, me as a developer, I don't get access to any of that. My application does, but I don't. So I don't need to have all that training that they require us to do, meaning I can do for a lot cheaper, can ship it a lot faster and improve it a lot quicker than what the regular system has been doing. And I think that's our goal. It's like if we can make all of that work, if we can make if we can create this movement of new healthcare apps powered by Noster that just compound on themselves in terms of new data and new visualizations, new interesting use cases, everybody wins. And if the company wins too, great. If the company doesn't win, I think we're going to be happy no matter what happens. But it's like it is all about decentralizing that component out of the regular system today.
Well said, Vitor. I know you have a hard stop coming up. So before we wrap up, anything else you'd like to plug with Amethyst? Anything else you're working on?
No, besides getting you two on an Android phone, I don't have any other passion in life, you know? that's what I keep telling everybody. It's an Android system with a Graphene OS, the open source operating system that removes everything from Google from the phone. And so you're going to have a plain Android experience with a Zap.Store or an Optanium store. But it's the store that does not have a catalog, meaning no one is choosing which apps are good and which apps are bad, whatever good and bad means for those companies. And you are choosing everything by yourself. You're not being tracked by anybody. You're just using the freest of the open source stacks that we have out there.
What? Just curious, because you de-Google. Yeah, your phone, but the only phone that works with Graphene is a Google phone, right?
Yep. and you know the Graphene, the team behind Graphene is a specialist on Android, meaning the operating system behind that is just you know not a Google featured Android, because Android is just picture Android just like Linux. You have multiple distributions and each, like Google does a version, Samsung does something different, and every manufacturer can have their tweaks and their added systems to the platform. What the Graphene folks do is they just take the base Android, they get rid of all the Google stuff, and they understand it, and because they have to do all of that, they also need to get rid of drivers. And because they get rid of drivers, they can only focus in specific phones. And while they looked at all the phones, especially like Samsung phones that are super good and so on, the easiest phone to for them to look at and get a sense of what's what the hardware is doing is a Google phone, surprisingly enough. Yeah. So from their perspective, they believe that the hardware behind the Pixel phones is as clean as you can have compared to other solutions.
Yeah, I went just off topic, kind of.
I know that's
kind of random, but it was when those pagers blew up. It was all the same, and I'm just thinking, what if all these graphene phones so had some sort of a kill switch over time? The elusive rug is always there.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, like this, putting things into chips these days is just so easy.
Yeah.
That I'm like, okay, we don't really know what's inside of those things. Man. We can have some people looking at it, but it's really hard if the chip itself is not open source. And even if it is, you can still hide things around on the manufacturing stage, right? Everything is open source, but there is this little component that just showed up in there, and it's just like, you know, you don't know what it does. So
it makes you think some of these secure mindset. It's just one massive LARP, and they got us by the balls. So
that's why in my house there's nothing really automated anywhere.
Yeah, all we can do is preventative maintenance, preventative measures, exactly. I mean, and just minimize choice.
I think people laugh at me because, like, you know, we're computer scientists, so we kind of know what is good and what's not in the system.
Uh-huh.
But we don't use any of it. And it's like, well, that should tell you a message. It's like, you know, it's not that difficult to understand what's going on. But yeah, it's if you can avoid anything connected at the home, we definitely do.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for spending time with us today. I've never talked to you in person. It's another one of the firsts that I enjoy having and doing the show. Obviously, you know, Avi, but thanks for coming. Avi, anything else?
No, I'm sure. Well, I'll be talking to Vitor quite a bit in the near and hopefully longer term future. But yeah, appreciate you taking the time, Vitor. Sorry for the technical snafu. We'll blame it on Derek Ross. We'll talk soon.
Well, anyone listening, please support Value for Value. Fountain is on both Google Android and iOS. So please support Value for Value, Boost, Post, Zap, Boostagram, whatever. We really appreciate it. We need to drive the culture, the Value for Value culture, and that's increasing the scale like we talked about. So thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.